All right. So my name is Lauren Shade. I'm with Allegro Software. I'm going to be moderating the next couple sessions here. I wanted to welcome you back from lunch. Just want to make a reminder that for the conference sessions, the audio and video is or audio is being recorded. The slides are going to be available on the website. If make sure you go to page 3 in your booklet, and you'll be able to see the passwords, be able to get all that information. And also wanted to make sure that if you have questions at the end, that you come up and use the microphone again so we can get the audio for the presentations after the show is over here. So with that, I'd like to introduce Paul Bonanelli from ETAS in Canada for his presentation. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, hi everyone. Thank you for joining me for this talk. Today I'm going to talk about some lessons learned in IoT threat modeling. This is joint work with Nevin Ebate, who's present here today, and Kevin Henry. And also, just for your information, when this talk was submitted, we were working under TrustPoint Innovation, but in the meantime, we've been acquired by eScript, a subsidiary of ETAS Canada. So you might see both on our badges or on the program. So I'm going to start by introducing a little bit IoT and IoT security and insecurity, and also touching briefly upon how it relates to cryptographic modules, and then dive into the meaty part of the talk, so some lessons learned in IoT threat modeling. And then I'm going to provide some methodology and examples, so the methodology that we developed to address those lessons learned, and some of our examples. And a few concluding remarks. So IoT is essentially the third big wave in internet development. In the first wave during the 1990s, you had about a billion users that were connected to the internet with fixed internet. Then 10 years later, in the years 2000, you had this second wave with an additional 2 billion users with the mobile internet. And right now we're in this this peak of IoT development in this third wave, and some studies suggest that by 2020 we'll have up to 26 billion connected things, and this number is up to interpretation. Some people say more, and things can be pretty much anything. So it can be a smart light bulb that you have at your house. But it can be a similar light bulb in a smart city infrastructure, which is connected to dozens of other light bulbs or components. It can also be vehicles. So we had an interesting talk this morning about vehicle-to-vehicle communication. So vehicles are also part of those connected things of the future. The problem with all these IoT devices is that they're more and more insecure. There was a study a few years ago by HP that revealed that a large majority of them have had pretty poor security. So that's why sometimes you hear this saying, the internet of insecure things, instead of the IoT, the IIoT, IoT. Or another good one that I heard recently is security. That's what the S in IoT stands for. So essentially, there's no security in IoT. So looking at some of the big widespread attacks recently, there was this Mirai botnet. So Mirai was essentially a malware that would scan the IPv4 range and look for a specific type of IP cameras that had default credentials, and then try to access those devices. And when it succeeded in doing so, would convert those IP cameras into part of this botnet. And this botnet was used in one of the largest distributed denial of service attacks to date. And a very similar malware that also came up pretty recently, called BreakerBot. So I don't know if you guys have heard about this one, but BreakerBot essentially did something very similar to Mirai, I think targeting the same type of devices. But in this case, it would not just convert the device into part of a botnet, but it would essentially destroy it. So it would corrupt some memory or erase some files, change some of the kernel parameters. And this is a very big problem for manufacturers, because in this case, the customer that bought the IoT device now demands reparation if the device is not in a working state anymore. He wants money back, essentially. So we identified a few of those common security issues. So in this case, it was, for example, the default credentials issue that came up pretty regularly, also in some of the work we've been doing with customers. A few other security issues would arise pretty frequently, like some open ports that were open for no particular reason, just because the manufacturer didn't bother to restrict access. And also, generally speaking, IoT relies on transport security. So there's usually no end-to-end encryption that is performed. They just assume that they have a TLS session, then they can send everything through this session, and it's going to be secure and beautiful. So there's really a lack of security awareness in the manufacturers. How does that relate to cryptographic modules? So to us, essentially, an IoT device can be viewed as an extension of a cryptographic module. And I just put the FIPS 140-2 definition of cryptographic modules there. But it is also much more than a simple cryptographic module, because it's connected. It is online. It's connected to the internet, as the name suggests. But it's also connected. It might be connected to other IoT devices and multiple components. It has a large computing power. So not only does it compute cryptographic operations, but it might do some data analysis. And the data that it handles might be very privacy sensitive. So those are considerations that might not be taken account into the certification of cryptographic modules, for example. And there's also a whole system that depends on it. But also, if you remove the IoT device from the system keeps functioning without it. There's the whole backend infrastructure, the cloud, the gateway, you might have a mobile component. So it's a pretty large and complex system. And there was an interesting talk last year by David McGrew at ICMC 2016, where he basically said that the current certification is not necessarily adequate to, the talk was about faithfulness of IoT devices, and he was saying that the certification is not adequate to provide required assurance over faithfulness. So IoT devices, and it was the case for some of them used in those attacks that I mentioned previously, they might do things that they're not supposed to do, and nobody really knows what they're doing. So what is unique about IoT and security? So the manufacturing and deployment process is pretty unique. The profit margins for manufacturers are pretty slim. So generally speaking, they don't want to invest too much time and effort and money into performing threat modeling and security assessments. And the time to market is pretty quick. So as soon as they have a good idea, they want to develop the solution. They don't want to spend time again in performing threat modeling. And the attack surface is pretty large. So not only you have the device, but you have a gateway, you have a mobile, you have the cloud, you have all the communication between these entities. So there's many places where you can attack it. And also, the environment is pretty hostile. As soon as you ship an IoT device, it's essentially free for all. Everybody can try to attack it, try to hack it, and it's very difficult sometimes to update those devices. So based on some of those common insecurities, we started thinking about how we could do better threat modeling for the IoT. And we essentially identified that there was a gap. And this is evidenced by all the vulnerable IoT devices, a gap between theory and practice, and design and implementation. And I just want to give you an example here. We had We had a product that we were assessing at Crosspoint, and our customer was claiming that their product was FIPS 140-2 certified. So we were quite interested and started looking more into the product, and it turned out that they were using OpenSSL, the FIPS certified version of OpenSSL, and they thought by using a certified version, they essentially inherited the certification of this cryptographic library. So this is really an abuse of certification in this case. So there's really a gap there. So we also learned that the existing threat modeling framework were usually quite difficult to apply to the IoT because those systems are very big and complex, so you don't necessarily know where to draw the boundaries of your system. Do you have to draw one around every component? But then what if you don't own some of the components? What if you have an external cloud provider? Can you safely assume that everything is done in good faith there? And the prices, as I said, has to be kept very low. Some companies don't want to invest. And again, pretty fast-paced environment. And just to touch on certification, it is valuable, but it has limitation. So sometimes, as we've seen, it might encourage for a bare minimum. So if you go for certification, it's this binary result. You have it or you don't have it, but you don't necessarily want to do more than what you have to do. It can be quite expensive as well. So some of the lessons learned in summary, those key principles that we identified is that you have to make threat modeling as cheap as possible if you want to be able to improve the security of, and these three might seem straightforward, but it's quite important to repeat them. So it needs to be cheap, it needs to be pretty simple to do. You don't necessarily want to make a threat modeling framework that is too complicated, because people in IoT don't necessarily have a very, very good background, or like the people we've had to deal with don't necessarily have a deep background in cryptography, in security. So it's important to make it understandable by everybody if they don't want to invest into doing too much consulting, for example. And also it needs to be fast so that you can repeat it. It's very valuable if you can do threat modeling during the design phase of a product, and then you can repeat it during development phase, and so on. So those are really three or four key principles that we identified. So our answer to that was to create a lightweight security framework, and it essentially consists of a series of targeted questions. It is completely tailored for the IoT ecosystem, so it's not meant to be applied anywhere. So we have questions that are targeted for the IoT device and the gateway, the mobile, and the cloud. And it's based on these IoT framework security considerations by OWASP. So we didn't just make up everything by ourselves, got some help there. And again, it's not supposed to compete with any type of certification. So I'm just going to give you some of the methodology and examples here, and then I'll explain in more detail, and then I'll give you some more examples. So we have a section about default credentials. So hopefully if our model was applied to the attacks that I described before, this would have prevented those attacks. So one question is that there's no default credentials to access the device. And we tried to freeze the sentences so that a yes would be a positive outcome and a no would be a negative outcome, so that people would be able to see very quickly if it's a good thing or if it's a bad thing. And then we have something about shared credentials. So you don't want to have credentials that are shared between two IoT devices, for example, or it could also be between two entry points to a device. You don't want to have the same credentials there. And then something about the fail-safe default principles. So a principle that interfaces are disabled by default. So for example, no ports left open for no reason. So that's an example of our blank template that we could use to do threat modeling to drive best practices during the design phase of a product. And then we also applied it to a customer product. And that's how we do security assessments. So in this case, for one of the products we assessed, there was a set of default credentials, root for the username and default for the password, that were used to access the device through SSH. And those same credentials were used to access the device for the, through its web interface. So then in the no shared credentials section, it did have shared credentials, so between the SSH and the web interface. And in this case, the IoT device also had a telnet port open for no particular reason, just because they didn't bother to lock it down. So our goal in developing those questions was really to address some of those key principles, the lessons learned, and essentially try to initiate some kind of dialogue with the customer. So not simply give them the report and say, okay, you guys did that, like you had those kind of issues, but really try to push for best practices during the design phase with the blank document that we have, and then during development where you can fill the template with issues that you identified, and really to try to raise awareness. And this allows us to reiterate, to repeat the process at a pretty low cost, because say you've done a security assessment for a product, and then you give the report back, you talk with the customer, and then they come back with some improvements over their solution, then you can take the same report and see where they changed things, and then essentially reiterate the process. So as you've seen, our template is essentially a series of simple questions, and we broke them down by components of this generic IoT infrastructure, and this allows to make it pretty cheap and fast because it's very, very targeted again. Just a quick summary and comparison with the existing threat modeling framework. I'm going to be pretty quick here, but our approach is quite different from all our existing ones in the sense that it's very targeted. It's not meant like common criteria, which is very, very generic, or a FIPS 190 CIA, which is very simple, but that's what makes it very, very generic in itself, because you can derive a whole bunch of documentation based on that. But our approach is we try to make it pretty fast, and again, it's not intended to be any type of certification. So that's the generic architecture of an IoT system that I mentioned before. So just to give you an idea, we have about 130 questions or targeted sections for an IoT device, and about the rest divided into the gateway, the cloud, and the mobile. So here again is an example of our template when it's not filled. So this is really trying to show how we can try to derive a best practices approach, best security practices at the customer side. So this one talks about update verification and the software release process. So that updates have to be done through a secure channel. And then after you've downloaded the update, you need to verify the integrity and the authenticity. But then the update might sit in memory for a little bit, or it might be on disk. So right before installation, it's also good practice to verify the integrity and the authenticity. And hopefully by showing that to a customer, they understand the reasoning behind those questions. We have similar questions for the gateway. So here's one about web interface, because usually there's a web interface to access the gateway. So is there one, yes or no? And if there is the access limited through the use of credentials, for example? Is there a secure communication to the web interface? And does it not use self-signed or invalid certificates? So again, an example of a sentence that is kind of weird because we yes was the positive outcome. And here a final example about channel security, and that also shows some of the shortcomings of our solution maybe, but is the communication done through a secret channel? And also, if yes, is there a key generation or key distribution process in place? So for one of our customers, for which we performed the security assessment, there was indeed a communication, a secure channel in place, so everything was going through WPA2 with a pre-shared key. Unfortunately, the key generation and key distribution process existed, but it was pretty weak. In this case, they had a key generation algorithm that they had made in-house, generating always the same key at startup. And also, we ended up finding this key pasted somewhere on Pastebin, so some of the developers used Pastebin to share the key, share the key among themselves. So, to conclude, we really identified that it was a lack of security awareness, mostly in manufacturer. So we tried to make it to make threat modeling much simpler, faster, also cheaper, so that they would consider it. And the way we structure our document make it continuous, so we can apply it during the design phase or the development phase of a product. So our answer is really this. Performing threat modeling as a set of targeted questions. And just as a final example, we had a customer that thought that their product was good enough. They just gave it to us to have a quick look. But in a few days, we identified issues. And this very quickly changed their mind about security, and they really saw value in what we're doing. And now we have a long lasting relationship and dialogue with them about security and about best practices. Thank you.
Let's see, do you have any questions while I'm, you can do that while I'm setting up the next presentation here. Anybody have any questions? Okay. Yeah. Try flipping it on.
In one of the slides, you had shown about SSH and default root access. Now, some of those seem to suggest that these can be easily identified by running a script on the device under test and determining if these are actually being followed or not. So are you using similar scripts to quickly come affirm or verify some of the answers to those questions?
It's actually pretty hard to write scripts because the IoT is such a weird ecosystem that every device runs on different platforms, different operating systems, have different type of microcontrollers. So we have some scripts, for example, for devices running on Linux, which is pretty easy to do. But for the rest, we don't.